You are listening to episode 116 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, Princesses, Dragons, and Technology.
I want to work for Google.
Okay.
And there's the reason for it is not because of the purchase they made this last week. That is only one small part of it. Have you seen those walking dogs? No, well, that is a stupid question.
Have I seen walking dogs?
Have you seen those videos of the robots, the four-legged robots, like walking up hillsides and like soldiers like kicking them and they're like doing all sorts of crazy stuff?
No.
Well, it would be more exciting if you had.
Oh, I've totally seen that. It's amazing.
So there's this company called Boston Dynamics. They're really a research company. They work with DARPA all the time, but they're like these pioneers of different types of, pedaled walkers, bipedaled, quad-pedaled, walking robots, and they've done some really cool work. Yeah, we've talked about it on the show before. One of the freakiest things that they've shown is...
I wasn't paying attention, apparently.
They fixed one of their big walking ones up with this, like, hand-grabbing thing. And what they show is, like, it walks up, picks up a cinder block, and then the whole thing, like, jumps and throws it over its back, and you could just chuck bricks. Like a long distance.
That sounds really dangerous.
Yeah. It looked incredibly dangerous, which is why everybody was like, what in the world are you guys doing? Those things could kill us. And they're like, yeah, that's like the point. They're military weapons. Well, Google confirmed on Friday that it has completed the acquisition of Boston Dynamics, the company responsible for the robots.
Huh.
And that's, everybody goes big because the big dog project is what these robots are called, have gotten a lot of attention, like 15 million views on YouTube attention, like big, and they're a constant competitor in DARPA. They love this kind of stuff. This is what they do. But the really big deal behind all of this is that not necessarily that they bought Boston
Are they Dynamics. Are they based in Boston?
I don't think so.
Okay. I'm not totally
Massachusetts.
But
yeah, it was.
That would be Boston.
It
okay.
was. Yeah. He's an MIT dude, of course. Because they're so smart.
So and, if you want to work for them, you'd have to move to Boston.
Well, I don't want to work for Boston Dynamics. I want to work for Google. And this is the reason why.
That's where their division's got to be located now, right?
Not necessarily.
Oh.
Because this is the eighth robotics company that Google has acquired in the last 6 months.
Really?
Yeah.
What are they up to?
Nobody knows.
Fantastic. Nobody has
any idea. Yeah, so it's funny because I remember like 2 weeks ago I read this article. It was in regards to Jeff Bezos and the whole, Amazon, what are those things called? The carrier drones and how that was just a giant PR thing and like it just was ridiculous. And obviously, they're not trying to figure out how to make that model work. It was just a really great sales pitch before Black Friday. And we might have talked about this on the show, but the fact that like they were saying that the Google cars, the autonomous cars, are clearly like that's exactly the same thing. It's just a big PR thing. And you made the comment of there's got to be a cheaper way to do PR than building automated cars, which lends credibility to the idea that they're actually legitimately trying to figure out how to do it. I'd say buying six robotics companies in the last year is pretty good indication that they're serious about this kind of stuff. And you ask the question, why are they doing this? And there's two reasons, I guarantee it. One piece of it is they want the brain trust. The guys at Boston Dynamics are geniuses, just brilliant beyond reason. And they're the kind of brains where you can set them to any sort of problem like this, and they'll come up with solutions that nobody else can. They're engineering brilliant, right? They're the type of people that take good ideas and take them the next 10%. you know, they take ideas that are 85% of the way there, take it the next 10%, give them 95% of the way there. And if you can give them an idea that's really good, that's already 95% of the way, guess what? They're going to give you extra credit. Like, they're just, they're great. And, you know, and so I think that's why Google bought Boston Dynamics. They're not trying to build walking robots. They're buying the brains. And the big thing with these robots and what's so cool about them is that they're incredibly aware of their surroundings in that they walk up hills, they walk all over the place, and how they manage that and they mitigate the different issues there is requires a lot of, processing of data of your surrounding, of scanning it, different sensors and stuff. And, you know, although there's a big difference between mechanically between driving and walking, navigating between driving and walking is not that different. And that's the big deal here. And that's why I think they bought Boston Dynamics. They bought the brains behind it, and they brought the navigating ability. Google is incredibly serious about the automated car. And, you know, people are talking about, you know, they might be building robots for their factories, which is entirely possible. What factories? I don't know what they're talking about. But, you know, maybe Google wants to start making factories or warehouses, or they want to do deliveries, or they want to do – and there's all sorts of things that Google wants to get into. But I think the reality of it is, this goes back to our talk last week on why Google bought – or why Apple bought that one company. Why did they buy it? Which company was it? Doesn't matter. You know, but the
touch or something.
Thank you. Exactly. But it's, you know, it's not usually the simplest answer is the real is the answer that's most likely. And I think that in this case, you know, the simplest answer is they're really serious about building automated cars, and they need really, really smart people with really fantastic technology to be able to finish what they're finish the project they're working on. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is them getting serious about it, you know, or more serious. And yeah, but that being said, boy, oh boy, do I want to work for Google right now. Because that's the kind of, that's the, and not just any part of Google, but this part of Google. Of course, right, I'm not smart enough. That's the real problem. I am just not smart enough. And I think I'm a smart dude, but I look at what these guys do and I'm like, nah, I'd be useless there. I'd get them coffee. I'd be smart enough to get them coffee, that's for sure. But, which would be worth it?
That's very cool. I like where, I mean, as much as I know, sounds cool.
Yeah,
well, I'm excited to see what they actually do.
Yeah.
Very cool. You know, it's not totally robotics, but it is bot-like in nature.
Excuse me.
The New York Times has made a bot that... it's second guessing NFL coaches on Twitter.
Yeah,
it's pretty funny. So what they do is, right now, what it will do is it analyzes fourth downs in games, and it analyzes it in real time, and then will determine should they punt it, kick a field goal, go for it, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and what's super funny is that if it it would be like, for example, in the they gave one where it was like the Packers. It was 4th-and-2, and they were like the Packers ball on the Lions 36, and they were down by 3 in the second quarter with 12:46 remaining. And the coach said, attempt the field goal. And they were like, and the result was a field goal by Mason Crosby for 54 yards. And the NY bot says, I would have gone for it. And then it goes even deeper. It says, when the game is reasonably close and there's still plenty of time on the clock, the most important thing teams can do is score points. The best measurement I have for that is by using something called expected points, which evaluates on average how many points any situation is worth, even when teams miss a field goal or go for it and fail. It has a whole methodology page. It goes, and here's the breakdown for the Packers scenario. And so their expected points just wasn't good. And they said that they would have succeeded 60% of the time, fourth and two, at this point in the game. She's like, should have done it. Made a mistake.
I would say there was a big article just like 2 weeks ago about the fact that, like, that that from a data perspective, coaches are wrong. They go for field goals way too often. And using that same data, they look at it and they sit there and they go with reasonable confidence that coaches should be going for it, especially like this fourth and two scenarios, way more often, because they tend to win the game when they do. But the problem is, you know, the Monday morning quarterback or the Monday morning coaches criticizing them for that decision when it doesn't work out. But the actual data, the actual math is suggesting that coaches that not only are the Monday morning coaches wrong, but the coaches on the sideline are definitely wrong too. You know, they shouldn't be going for the safe bet because it's not safer. It's actually they're more likely to win or more likely to put points on the board if they go for it than if they weren't. And let's be honest, it'd be way more exciting, which is all I really care about for my entertainment. So.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what you alluded to is kind of where they were like, yeah, where this is headed. You know, if it's the New York Times could put something together and be able to do some of these real-time data analytics, like, you're going to start to see football coaches have their own Twitter bots.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, they're maybe manually or not, or, you know, inputting the data, and it's telling them, do I go for it or not? And you will watch a lot of those decisions.
Should I go?
You know, get relegated to a computer, or at least, you know, inform. You know, man, the computer's saying I should do it. We make it 60% of the time, and then they, you know. But anyways, yeah, it was just kind of funny. A way that, you know, New York Times, man, their whole data section, they have pretty fun. It sounds like they have a fun time doing what they're doing.
Yeah,
it would be a fun group to work for.
Yeah, definitely.
I think.
You can go work for the New York Times. I'll go work for Google. It'll be a party.
It'll be great. There's another, you know, speaking of tracking data and making recommendations, there's a thing that's been going on with shoppers. The tracking technology inside of malls and retailers is really starting to take off.
Nice.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, they're literally doing like heat maps, and they're trying to watch where customers are going. And so they're implementing this technology, which totally reminded me of a book that I read a while ago, which was fantastic. If you're ever looking for you know, a book on shopping and how to improve sales, the book is called Why We Buy by Paco Underhill.
Yeah.
And super awesome. This guy, he's a is an anthropologist.
Nice. Which,
you know, their job is to observe nature and see what happens. And he just observed shopping centers. And you know, and so companies would come in and they'd hire him and be like, dude, help us improve our store and our sales and stuff like that. And so like he came up with all sorts of, you know, rules, and he learned stuff. Like, for example, the more time someone spent in a store, the more they ended up buying.
Huh.
Yeah. You're like, all right. So his recommendation.
But, you know, that's an important thing to prove out. That's definitely worth, you know, actually saying is definitely true. Even though it feels intuitively true, I can understand why it's good to be able to prove it.
Yeah, well, and I think a lot of people knew that there was a correlation there.
Yeah.
Right? And he goes, no, it's causation. The more time you spend in the store, the more you buy. Which, I think, at least for a while, people would argue the opposite, right? They're like, oh, no, you're just in there a lot because you were going in to buy a lot. And his whole thing is, like, you can influence the amount of time someone spends in a store. And some of them are like one of them's kind of obvious. He's like, just increase interaction. Have more employees. Have them sit there, and while I'm saying this, think Apple Store in the back of your head. you know, have them actually ask good questions, get the customer to talk, be engaged. Don't just leave them alone, because when they're actually talking to you, they'll be spending more time about it, and chances are they will choose to buy it once they're in there. Another one, kind of weird, so he goes, you want to do slow music, because if you do slow music, you walk slower.
Huh.
Therefore, you spend more time in the store. Therefore, you will buy more. But you're just like, you get done reading the book, and there's a part of you that's like, wow, that was super fascinating, super interesting. And then you walk into a store after reading it, and you just feel sick. Oh my gosh, look at all these things. Well, like other ones, he found, you know, the people filled their baskets with food. And so they did an experiment where they just made, or carts, you know, and so they just made bigger carts. And guess what? People filled their carts with food.
Yeah.
And so he was like, you guys should make bigger basket carts. So you go to a place like Costco, they're ginormous. And, you know, and they have slowly grown over size. I thought another interesting one, you've probably noticed this in stores. He was the one who recommended that they put hand baskets in the middle of the store, not just in the entrance. He's like, because you'll get people like me, and I'm horrible at this, which is why I know it, is I don't grab a basket or a cart, because usually I'm like, oh, only one or two things. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, you know, this is, you know, this milk is actually cold. I don't want to hold it in my hand anymore, and I got to get, like, maybe, you know, I saw one other thing.
Okay, where are you shopping where they put baskets in the middle of the stores? Because that seems like a stroke of brilliance, and I think about it all the time, and there are no stores that do that. It drives me crazy.
Yeah, I know. Well, I don't know. The stores I shop at, Winco, do they do it? I don't know. I know Walmart does, for sure. Safeway, so does Target.
Safeway and Trader Joe's do not.
I could see that.
Drives me crazy.
Yeah, but yeah, that, I mean, that's just kind of their, like, yeah, they should be put them in the middle. You know, and then other stuff where he just goes, you know, signs are really, really important. You got to give people directions. You got to let them know what's going on and where things are. Otherwise, you know, they get frustrated and a confused mind says no. And so he's like, just make it very clear. So anyways, it's an amazing book. I highly recommend it. You know, this guy's got years of experience. The problem is that he's probably retired by now. And, you know, and he just has limited time. And so companies are trying to figure out, how do we duplicate some of his research, track our own stuff. And so they are turning to technology and sensors to, you know, track what shoppers are doing. And so they're doing stuff where it's like, they were talking about this explicitly for, like, for Black Friday, where they could do, yeah, I don't want to say it, like, they would notice hot parts of the store or items that were selling really well. And they didn't know it beforehand, because, which I'm kind of surprised at, you'd think they would notice that they're selling well. And so what they would do is they could then move them to different parts of the store, like, you know, some sort of, I don't know, like lotions or something that are selling well. They can move it to another part of the store that, you know, is getting less activity. And then you'd watch customers, they could watch them migrate over to this other part of the store. And they said they could reduce congestion in real time as a result of these sensors. And, you know, just trying to, which I'm like, apparently congestion's a good thing, so I don't, you know, I'm sure it's all balance.
I think what they want to do is they want to spread it out so that they drag you across the store and nothing, you know, don't put everything into one part of the store so you can go and get everything you want.
Yeah.
Leave, you know, force you to walk around the entire store.
Very true. So, yeah, I just thought it was very interesting that, yeah, these shoppers, these stores have been doing that a lot, and now they're starting to automate the process and do it all in real time. And
yeah, that's cool. That is really interesting.
I thought it was interesting. In other news, I should probably, yeah.
Do you want me to go, or do you want to just keep
it? Let me roll one more, and then you can go for a while. So Square came out with a new card reader.
It's true.
And I actually just want to touch on this one very quickly.
Okay.
And it was just this one one line in Wired that I just thought was super interesting. Little background: Apple has a Lightning plug connector. The guy who made that went over to Square to help them redo their card reader. Instead of doing off-the-shelf stuff, they made one for their own, you know, custom. And so it says, at one point in development, they found that the level of contact they needed to successfully transfer data from the card resulted in a swipe that felt too loose. And when the swipe felt too loose, it felt like it wasn't working and would thus require another swipe. So they increased the friction above what was actually needed, an adjustment that was overkill from a technical point of view, but resulted in a swipe that felt perfect to the hand.
Yeah.
Ah, I love good design.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. It just is. It sounds beautiful that they actually, you know, paid attention to that sort of thing, where, you know, it'd be so easy to design that all ahead of time and just kind of go, this is what's required, put it all in, ask if it works, does it function, you know, from a technological perspective, and answer that question quickly and easily, yes, it does, only to find that it actually doesn't because people don't like how it feels, you know, that's what Apple is notoriously good at, and you can tell that, you know, this guy is a product of that mindset, you know, and
yeah, science. He managed to make it 45% smaller, which is pretty crazy, and so they're going to continue to go on a kick butt, and I just, you know, especially when you have design ideas like that.
I have a tangentially related question. Did my friend get in touch with you about his potential partnership with Square?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah, we talked. I think I talked to him for a couple hours.
Oh, wow.
That's
awesome.
What I do. Yeah. You know, we talked about Square and some of its, you know, where it's strong, where it could improve. I gave him my perspective on it from a landlord perspective, and or my thoughts maybe, and why I wouldn't use it yet, and how it would need to improve for me to be interested in it. We also just talked about interviewing in general and how to ask good interview questions and how to prepare, which my number, like my very first question with him, you know, which any product company is going to ask, you know, is, well, what do you think of the product? Have you used it? Have you tried it? You know, to which he was like, no. I was like, okay, bad answer.
He said, learn how to lie.
No, what I said was, look, I'm not saying you have to go out and buy one, because it doesn't necessarily make sense to get one or whatever. I was like, but go to a local place that's using it and ask them if you can play with it. Buy some stuff with it. Ask them all sorts of questions. Get super interested.
Especially since his best friend's roommate uses it whenever she cuts our hair. You know, it's not like it's hard to get a hold of one. But
yeah, and so I was like, if you talk to like a, you know, go to a coffee shop or something, that way when they ask you, what do you think? You go, well, I actually spent some time researching it and visiting local retailers to get their thoughts and opinions on it. And you can talk about the three things that you thought were amazing about it, and then the three ways that you would like to, that it should be improved, given the feedback that you got from those local retailers. I was like, that would be a much better answer than
no. Yeah. Good. Yeah. That's
good advice for any job that you're applying.
Well, I'm glad you got a chance to talk to him, as long and short of what I was.
Yeah. We'll see if he gets it or not.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's got to let's see. If he gets it, we'd better get an interview. That's all I'm saying.
He also asked me, you know, he's like, what's more important, you know, going for your dream job that may not pay as much, or just going for a job that pays a lot that you may not be in love with? It's like, ooh, that's an important question to ask.
That is a big question. That is a difficult question, one that we have discussed before, because there is a price where it might make sense to, you know, if you only have to work for 2 or 3 years at a job that pays ridiculously well, but it then allows you to move on to do a job that you'd rather do, does that make a lot more sense than, you know?
Yeah.
But that is totally besides the point. When the point is, Have you seen the new anti-cord cutting campaign?
I have not.
That the cable company has put together. This is fantastic.
I don't know how I would see it, but
well, it's not. It's an internet-based one because that's who they're trying to aim towards.
Fair enough. Okay.
Basically, which one is it? The National Cable and Telecommunications Association. It's the main trade association for the cable operators. They've put together a series of commercials that are called The Whole Saga. And they're basically a series of like online commercials. And if you go to the website, we'll have a link to the to this page where it'll link to the commercials. But essentially what it is it's trying to argue for don't cut your cable out. It's trying to convince people to stick with cable, and it's ridiculous. There are these like super over the top, dumb, campy commercials where these guys have big holes in them if they don't have cable, and they're put into these situations where they're difficult situations. One example is about a bike rider who like runs into a rabbit and he wants to engage with the rabbit, and you're asked to choose whether or not he's got cable or not. And if he's got it, he sees a video where he sees a newscast where he's told about these rabbits being rabid and going to kill him. And if he doesn't have cable, he doesn't see that newscast and gets attacked by the rabbits. But it's stupid. It's really dumb. And it's interesting that this is definitely the direction that it's going, because they're trying to, you know, they are taking notice of the fact that people are not using, or people are starting to cut the cable. And, you know, what I think is interesting about it is that it's like, you know, you and I, well, technically I have cable, but I never use it. But for cable cutters, people who don't use cable, sometimes you don't even notice the fact that, or you don't notice what you don't have, which is horrifying to them. Because, you know, forever, their whole model was based on the fact that you'd go to work, everybody would talk about the cool TV show they saw over the weekend, and you would be painfully aware of what you don't have. Mm-hmm. And whereas that just doesn't exist anymore. And so now they're trying to draw your attention to it, which I think is really indicative of a problem and for them. And then they went and did it with some of the worst commercials that have ever aired on national TV.
Classic.
Yeah, it is definitely worth, well, it didn't air on national TV, I guess, but it's definitely worth checking out because they're bad.
I clicked on a link and no video showed up.
Really?
Really. Says The Whole Saga, sorry you missed it. To find out how cable connects you to the people and things you love, go to ncta.com.
Whoa. That's funny. They took it down. They took it down. I wonder if they were getting enough bad press that they decided to, cut their losses. Huh. I'm sure you can find it somewhere online, but Google it. We're not going to.
Okay.
But yeah, that's what it's at. Another big news piece: Ubuntu Touch, the Linux based thing.
Uh huh.
Oh wait! No! I don't want. Sorry. I'm gonna skip around a little bit. So right after the anti-cord cutters, big media companies are paving the way for cord cutters. So this is kind of exciting. So you got companies like Apple, not Apple, Disney. Who else is doing this?
Viacom.
Yeah. What they're doing is they're setting up what they call multi-channel video programming distributors, or virtual MVPDs. And what they essentially are is a multi-channel video program distributor is a cable company,
mm-hmm.
Plain and simple. Comcast would be an example of this. What do they have? Multiple channels. What are they doing? Video programming, and they're distributing it.
Okay.
And that's always been delivered, you know, through these very traditional routes to your TV. Essentially, what's going on is these companies are setting up a virtual version of that, which is to say something for the internet. So what's cool about this is instead of using a cable box that connects to a cable company, essentially what you'll do is you'll connect to a server through an IP address, and it'll do the exact same thing. And it has all the same legal, you know, it'll have the same legal paradigm as a cable company. Effectively what it is it's a cable company, but without the cable. It just runs over the internet, which is kind of cool. And the reason why it's cool, you know, in that it's moving somewhere. It's an acknowledgement of the fact that the traditional paradigm of how cable works just isn't going to be the future. You know, you're going to be able to get your highest definition content through high-speed internet in the future, and so they're going to have to make the transition. It just doesn't make any sense to do it the way that they're doing it. This is the start of it. Now, hopefully what happens is this kind of legal framework and a low bar to entry will make it possible for more cable companies and more competition. Because you're not going to be – because the big deal is you don't have to run over Comcast's – you know, you don't have to – Comcast can't have a local monopoly because they own all the cables in an area. As long as you get, you know, cable from Comcast, you should be able to connect to one of these virtual MVPDs. And then so Disney can go ahead and license their content to different virtual MVPDs, cable companies, and then you can just run it over the internet. So hopefully, you know, as we try to figure out the future of what cable looks like and what entertainment looks like, and as we move away from the more traditional cable networks, this will help kind of work as a transitionary purpose. It's really easy to think of Apple setting up one of these and running stuff through their server and, you know, getting their own licenses with different companies to do this and running it all through the Apple TV or Google or whoever. So they're making it easier, which is very exciting because I just like watching this kind of transition stuff. It doesn't make that big of a difference to me because I don't watch that much TV. But, you know, and what I watch way later than everybody else. That's the biggest thing is I never watch it on time or I buy it. So, okay. Kind of wraps that up. Back to Ubuntu Touch. So Ubuntu Touch, they did that giant Indiegogo project that didn't take off because they were looking for like $32 million and like eight of it. but, you know, everybody was still excited about it. Everybody wants, not everybody, but a few people want an Ubuntu phone. It's always great to have another solid competitor in there, and I think it's awesome technology. If I had the money, I'd definitely buy whatever comes out first. Well, good news. Ubuntu finally got their first cellular mobile phone partner. So
cool.
So after 7 years of being in development, the thing is ready to be put onto a phone, and they're going to get their first piece of hardware, which is cool. It's not going to be in America, which is not cool, but you know, it's better to start somewhere than nowhere.
Totally.
And hopefully it'll be heading our way soon across the pond.
Nice. Do they say when it'll come out?
Maybe. The Linux-based OS, but said it will offer high-end phones in 2014. We have concluded our first set of agreements to ship Ubuntu on mobile phones. We're shifted gears to
2014 is pretty fast.
Yeah, that's next year.
Which is like 2 weeks away.
Yes.
I guess it could be the end of next year, but all right.
Yeah. Probably not going to be ready for CES, I think is the long and short of it, but probably the end of the year. But speaking of Linux,
cool.
So this is another big Linux thing that's going on right now. Steam OS officially got released to the world on Friday. I have not downloaded it yet,
but I want to. I just don't
know
what
I would do with it. Do you have a machine that you can do that on?
I can always boot camp it onto my Mac.
I guess that's true.
But it kind of defeats the purpose, so I'm not going to. And I'm just not. I'm not good enough with Linux. I mean, it would be fun, but you know, the reality of it is, I want so. I'm going to wait until, because they just shipped their all of their Steam boxes, all of their Steam machines to their beta testers, and I didn't get one. Jerks. I know, but I'm
do
gonna.
Do you know you want one?
No.
Okay.
I might have failed to uphold my end of the bargain, but you know it's cool. It's really exciting. I'm very excited to see where this goes and kind of see what developments go on with it. And you know, we'll see. I'm figuring that probably mid next year I want to get one. And at this point I'm kind of leaning towards the idea of buying something that somebody else makes. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. All I know is I'm excited. It's cool I love technology.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, and from what I've read,
see that CES, which will be neat.
Yeah, very neat. And from everything I've read, people are really, really, really happy with what Valve has done. Where it's like,
well, they know software, so it's not like, you know, they're total noobs to that space.
Right. But the big thing is that they've, what the heck? Don't do that. Ars Tech. Where did I read it? I don't think it was in this article, but what they said is basically they gave enough tools of Linux where, although like, you know, you've got, it's obviously a Steam machine and that's kind of like the skin that goes over it. You can kind of get into the Linux part of the machine really easily. It's a full-blown computer, and it's just an easy interface for playing video games most of the time, which most of the people who were most excited about the fact that this was a Linux project, that was what they were really hoping for. They were hoping that they weren't going to take Linux and strip away anything that makes it Linux, you know, and then just have the video game console, because that kind of defeats the point, in their mind. And I like the idea of them straddling the line of it's open source, it's hackable, you can do all sorts of cool stuff to it, but it runs really well if you just leave it the way it is. Sort of like current versions of Android. Yeah, you can do all sorts of fun, you know, stuff and break into it, but if you just leave it the way it is, it runs really well. And that's kind of what I'm hoping for. It's my dream. And it'll be cool. I'm excited. I am excited.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'll live vicariously through you.
Sounds good.
Hey, total side thought here.
Yeah.
If you could get a hold of Google Glass, would you be interested in it?
Do I have to pay for it?
Yes.
Well, this is a really... It's interesting that you would ask this question, because I've already had to make this decision once this week, and I came down on the side of I don't think I could justify the expense. It's ridiculous. Okay. Why?
Then I'm going to put it out there to anyone who's listening to this tech podcast. If you're interested in getting glass on your face for a mere $1,500, I have a friend, Mr. David Perry, who's been on this podcast, who has a pair of glasses, has three invites to give out.
Oh.
And he said he's willing to give them out to people who are actually going to buy them. And so I said, you might be interested. I obviously was not, because I'm a cheapskate, but that's not true. I'm frugal. I'm smart with my money.
Yeah.
And
Keegan, a former and also an occasional contributor to the podcast, got an invite and was of a similar mind to me, which is I can, but I won't, because I have other things I need to spend my money on. And asked me if I wanted to be recommended for one of the invites, and I was like, oh, I'd give the same response. So it's hard for me to say yes.
But yeah, almost, yeah. They're starting to get out there. I mean, it's kind of losing its cool factor. It's not losing its factor. But
okay, just out of curiosity, what's your price again
for 500? I think I'd do 500 now today.
What about a year from now?
Well, they said a year from now it'll be 300.
Did they say 300?
I thought they said 200 to 300. You know, actually, you know what I you know, it's funny. You know what I really said? My biggest problem is that it's not the 1500 for the glasses, which is kind of ridiculous. But that's not my biggest problem. It's the fact that I'd also have to go out and buy a phone.
Wait, what?
Because
that works with your iPhone.
What? It works with your iPhone?
Yeah.
Oh. I don't know that. When did that happen?
I was rethinking. I don't know. Yeah, totally works.
I'm not rethinking that much.
Okay. All right. Got it. If you are interested, DM me somewhere. Twitter, Facebook, Google+, my website, jamesfurlow.com, whatever. Yeah. Leave a comment. Yeah.
You can talk to me too, also, James.
Yeah. What else you got, man? Since we started late, I'm starting to run out of steam.
Yeah, me too. I'm gonna blow through my last two stories. speaking of video games, I realize I should have done this transition when we were speaking of SteamOS. Oculus Rift raised $75 million. They're in their second round of funding. This time, it's for going to full-blown production. They're making it for consumers.
About time.
I know. Super exciting. I still haven't gotten to use one, and I really want to. I think I'm thinking about making it a mission of mine to seek one out and try it out because they look incredible. I seem really cool. And then also, this is a shameless endorsement of my favorite company. Tesla's made noises that they will be announcing their Model E, and it's slated for a reveal in Detroit in 2015. Yep. And it's going to be a $40,000 car, is what they're talking about. But they haven't actually revealed it yet, and they won't for 2 years. So I'm not even quite sure why we're talking about it, other than are they like the company, and I like talking about them.
And it puts a car within, well, you should never buy a new car. But, you know, when they become used, it puts them within that price range that's actually feasible.
Yeah, not ridiculous.
He had a cool talk, just since we're also on it, where I think it was Kevin Rose who was interviewing him.
Yeah.
And they were talking about innovation and barriers that people put up. And he was like, you know, when the car first came out, he was like, people were like, these things will never take off. He's like, there's grass everywhere. Your horse just let it eat. Like, whereas there's no gas stations anywhere, so your range on where you can take your car is very limited. It's like, plus people love their, you know, their buggy whips and the click clop, and you know, you take your time and experience nature instead of speeding through it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he was like, these people had all these reasons why the car would never work. And he's like, and we're in the same situation here where people are like, oh, electric cars will never work. There's not enough electric stations. So even if you could go far, you don't have the infrastructure for it. And he's just like, yep, that's what they said way back when. And look what happened. So anyways, just kind of a fun, you know, we'll see. Obviously, it's a different situation than it was then. Because the cars were, well, because you got a lot more from the transition from a car, from a horse to a car, than I think you do from gas to electric.
That's
you know,
true.
You're still going the same speed. You still have the same comforts. You know, it's different. So it's not.
Yeah. Did you hear that? What's his name? Leonardo DiCaprio he dropped a ton of money into building an electric Formula One car.
No.
Yeah, they're trying to just raise awareness on the capabilities of electric cars, and so they're building a Formula One car, and they're going to have it compete.
I wish I had stupid amounts of money to do stuff like
me
that.
Me too, because that sounds fun.
Finally, this is just kind of funny, so I have to share it. there's, you know, we're coming up to the holiday season and you may be going on vacation and not being near your computer. And this company, I don't know what in the world their name is, Relaxed. That's it. They have set up a system which is like a out-of-the-office automatic replies for your social networks, not just for email anymore. So you connect Relaxed to Twitter and Facebook, and then if anyone writes on your Facebook wall or mentions you on Twitter or sends you a private message, you can give a reply. Thanks for the post. I'm currently on vacation and can't respond. I will when I get back.
Wow.
How awesome is that?
That's funny. Man. Wow.
So if you're that person who is so connected and don't want to leave your followers in the lurch because somehow they didn't read your status update that you were going on an awesome vacation, you have a way via Relaxed. One of those, again, you're like, it's a smart idea. Clearly, you know, I could see where someone had a need for that, but yeah. There it is. Pretty funny. there's your holiday guide for you to help you just get away and not have to worry about it. You can be, wait for it, Relaxed.
Oh, baby.
During your vacation. So there you go, man. That was a lot. We started off talking about Disney and Nintendo, Snapchat versus SpaceX, Google Fiber, the Fitbit, some health-related things, some robots, some bots, the Square thing, the whole saga, Aereo TVs, Ubuntu, and then more video games, mentioned Google Glass, Oculus, Tesla, Twitter, Facebook. There. That was the show right there. You got it.
I was going to say, what? We've never done that before. This show in review.
I don't know. I felt need to
felt good.
Add a bow. Around it. So that's what we just did. Everybody, thank you for joining us. We really do appreciate it. My name, I'll do this right. My name is James Furlow. I'm not going to do this right. Oh my gosh, I'm pathetic at this. What do I got to set this to? I need to do this to, come on, where are you? 16.
I believe in you, James. I believe in you.
I know. Well, the problem is I'm going to play a music and I changed something. I'll get this. So, I don't know, what am I going to call you? My fire-breathing, gold-loving, mountain-dwelling brother is Matthew Furlow, and so we will talk next time. Thank you.